Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tyre. E-Range EV tyres are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tyre with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetyres.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E-Tyres.com to find your EV's next set of tyres.
Hello, it's Friday the 1st of December, which means both Michael Bublé and Mariah Carey are emerging from their caves. Your ugly Christmas sweaters can be removed from the back of the drawer. It's almost holiday season. I'm feeling a little bit festive for the first time in many, many years. But it's also, because it's Friday, it's the Inside EVs podcast. And today, I, your host, Alex Goy, hi, I'm being joined by Lacey Misco Electric. Hi, Lacey.
Howdy.
The boss man, Patrick George. Hello, Patrick. He's waving for those of you doing a listen. And Hazel Hello. Southwell.
Yes.
Hi, Hazel.
Hi.
Hi. Hopefully, is everyone good? Everyone happy, bright and shiny?
Well, I
figure there's a big story to talk about this week. So let's immediately get cracking.
Huge story.
Let's immediately get cracking with EV news. I guess it's just the news now. Yeah, but so the big story this week is that EV registrations in Europe have surpassed diesel for the first time. Now, this is actually quite big. If I skip to my notes on it, so in October 2023, the average registrations went up 36.3%, bringing it up to 121,808, and diesel went down 13.2%. Year on year, Jan to October, EVs are up 53.1%, and diesels aren't doing as well. Patrick, you've recently been in Europe.
Yes.
You have thoughts.
Yes, I do. I was, my wife and I went to Portugal for Thanksgiving. It's like our tradition as of late is that's when we like to travel together. It's easier for work. And, you know, I haven't been to Europe much because of certain world events that made traveling hard in the last couple of years. But this is one of my first times back at length. And I was amazed at how many EVs I saw on the road. And just like the sort of clatter of diesel engines that you are sort of ubiquitous in European cities that you don't really hear in America. You know, it's being replaced by more and more silent cars. And like every Uber I took over there was a Renault Zoe, which is like my new favorite EV because it is tiny and it's got a tiny battery pack and it's got roll down windows and it's cheap and it gets the job done. And all the EVs in America that we have are like, you know, $100,000, pickup trucks with a battery the size of one Mazda Miata. So great news for the Europeans. I'm very, very happy to see that. And that's starting to, you know, take the place of diesel tech, you know, which kind of needs to be set into the sun a little bit.
Fun fact about the Renault Zoe, when they first announced they were going to call it the Zoe, a lady called Zoe Renault tried to sue Renault because she didn't like it. Unsurprisingly, she lost. Hazel, you also had thoughts on this. You wish to talk about this.
Yes. So obviously something happened about diesel cars in, say, like 2015 or so. Sales have been steadily decreasing. So in 2015, 88% of the cars Volvo sold were diesels. And other manufacturers had like nearly as high percentages, like I think it was 77% of Mercedes. Mm. Volkswagen actually only 55, but all 55% of them were real bad. So the good news, if you live in the geographic area of Europe and don't immediately want to die of choking, which I assume is the case for both myself and Alex.
I'm not a big fan of it. Like diesel, like no. on that note though, diesels do stink. So I walk around town quite a bit. I cycle around London quite a bit because it's just easier to get around that way. And getting stuck behind a truck, a van, the old London taxis, those TX4s, it smells like kind of sweet, awful wee, and it just chemicals. It's gross. So the fact there's less of that around is good. And now, because there are fewer diesels, the diesel smell is more noticeable.
Yeah. Especially because, I mean, also we were for a long time in Europe incentivized to buy diesels because there was a belief that they were cleaner, which obviously is the opposite of what's actually true about diesels. Although diesels have been in decline steadily for the best part of 10 years, battery electric vehicles going selling more than diesels is actually a big thing because a lot of people refuse to give them up because they were longer range cars, they were cheaper to fuel, the diesels this is, and so to see not just because in Europe if you wanted a long range car then you bought a diesel, if you were driving a long way then you bought a diesel, because that was the perception of the efficiency of them. So for BEVs to actually be going past that and to be overcoming this image that, you know, they're short range cars, they're tiny little city cars, etc. Yes, there's certainly been some legal kind of assistance in the sense that European government
had incentives.
Yeah, like both there's incentives to scrap your diesel and also disincentives to buy one. They are harder to tax, they're harder to register and whatever. And if you bring them into a lot of cities, they will charge you a fee, which, to be honest, is right because you're polluting. So, there is a bit of assistance, but it, to me, it's very interesting that the former kind of long range vehicle is being beaten by BEVs. So there's clearly some kind of image swivel there.
Image swivel is good swivel. So has anyone else got anything to say on this? Because we do have another story that's not quite as big.
I don't have anything that's specific. Well, it kind of relates somewhat. I thought some big news of this week was that Geely and NIO are now working together on a battery swapping standard and compatibility. And I think that's huge news just because there's so much under the Geely umbrella. And of course, that is going to proliferate in the Chinese market. But what could that mean for coming here to the US, I just think that the implications are huge considering how big of a company that is and how NIO has done over 30 million battery swaps through their owners already. And so I think it is a proven technology that now they're starting to get more automakers on board to, you know, jump on with battery swapping. And what could that mean for the US market in dropping the prices of Chinese made EVs and throwing a battery swapping capability in our market? Who knows if we'll see it anytime soon, but I just think that that was a pretty big story.
Yeah, I've spent a while wondering, like, when is this going to catch on elsewhere? Now it's like, oh, if they're teamed up with Geely, or it's like, okay, I haven't heard anything about this officially, but it's like, you could see a future where Volvo, Polestar, somebody gets in on this. Like this was, you know, it's been fairly successful for NIO, for what I understand, in China, but like, it was never meant to be just this one-off thing that stays there. So really interesting idea to see where that goes next, you know. Is there any other news that happened this week? Anything else?
I read a thing.
Did a car turn off?
I was a bit groggy this morning, but this startup has released a truck. And it appears to be causing some waves. Oh, this is going to make so many people unhappy. Yes, it's the Tesla Cybertruck. The Tesla Cybertruck is finally here after years and years and years of being promised it'll be here. It'll definitely do this. It'll definitely do that. Yesterday, or last night, American time, there was a big event. The vehicles are being it has been unveiled. We've got lots and lots of details on it. So I'm going to kind of whiz through some of the headlines pretty quickly. The rear drive car, which is arriving a little later down the line, is starting at $60,990. It goes all the way up to the $99,990 Cyber Beast, which is, it sounds like a transformer or something you would make up in the schoolyard. The specs are just maddening. Power goes, the all-wheel drive car, the middle one is 600 horsepower. The Cyber Beast has 845 horsepower. The torque figures I want to talk about, because they're saying it ranged from 7,435 pound-feet to 10,296. That confuses me. 0 to 60 times go from 6.5 seconds all the way down to 2.6 top speeds from 112 to 130. Range for the just the rear drive one is 250 miles, up to 340 for the all-wheel drive and 320 for the Cyber Beast. It's got so much stuff. We're going to have to talk about all of this.
When I was talking about how much I loved the Renault Zoe in Europe, the tiny hatchback with roll down windows, like an 80s Corolla. This is the opposite end of the spectrum.
The 6,700 pound Cybertruck is a little bit different from the Zoe.
What does more utility than a truck mean? Is this some kind of like weird? Like, is that utility as in it makes more people happy?
Well, weirdly, like, some people will use it.
Or... I think that's utilitarianism. We're talking about utility. So that's how many boats can I tow? And can I haul other boats while towing more boats
Weirdly, some people will use it as a personality, which I think is what they mean. I have a Cybertruck, hear me roar. So I think some of the bigger takeaways, like loads of stuff went on last night, we will touch on it, including that dodgy Porsche race, is that the prices have gone up because he promised it at 40-something thousand, and he said, was it 500, 600-mile range? Neither of those have happened. The price increase, I think we can quite happily square away because material costs have gone massively up. Like costs of vehicles have spiked over the way. It is quite a massive price increase, up 20,000 to 30,000.
People were kind of nailing them over this on Twitter. I saw it in the comments, but it's also like, yeah, that's very fair and valid, but like, so has Ford, so has Chevrolet. Like, they've all done this where it's like, it's going to cost this much, and then it like shoots up from there. So
yeah,
like, it sucks, but I mean, like, Tesla is hardly alone in this point.
Edmunds released a bunch of comparative figures. The average price of a truck in that sector is what, $65,000 to $76,000-ish. So actually, it's kind of okay. And they were saying with incentives and fuel savings, prices actually range from just under 50 to a little over 96,000, which is still a lot of money, but that it kind of makes it more realistic with a little bit of PR push in it.
You compare it to the F-150 Lightning price increases, it's not really that significant.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I saw also, it's like, I'd forgotten this, but the Silverado EV is like about 80 grand almost, and those barely exist. So yeah, like, this is a very expensive vehicle, but it's basically in line with its competitors. And like, he quoted 39.9 some years ago, like, these days, that's like a base Tacoma with cloth seats. Like, it's in the truck world, you don't get a lot, unless you're getting a Ford Maverick or something. So I'm not excusing it, but I'm like, it is for par for course.
It's only for Renault Zoes, you know?
Yeah. Well, strangely, I had this argument with someone on Threads the other day because one of my favorite ever car brands is Dacia, because they make small, cheap cars. They do have an electric car. It's called the Spring. I haven't had a go in it yet, but I will one day. But they released a new Duster, which is this, essentially, it's a box on wheels. It's unpretentious. I adore it. One of the best things ever. And someone said, oh, but it's really expensive. Oh, they're supposed to be sub 20 grand. They're supposed to be this and supposed to be that. But the reality of any of this is that stuff costs stuff to make, and stuff is getting more expensive. Inflation is skyrocketing everywhere, so it is to be expected. It's the things that aren't going, wages aren't going up. Be angry at your boss. Don't be angry at Ford for trying to have a business.
We could be, I yes and no. It's like, I think we could be angry at all these companies for being drunk on profit margins and like kind of squeezing out the customer. It's like, well, if you want a car, you should get a 10-year car loan. Like, like. I think both can be true, but it's like the pickup truck segment's kind of insane in America. But I mean, like, you know, like Lacey, as a Rivian owner, I've been really curious what you think of any of the stuff we've talked about on Cybertruck so far, just this thing in general. So what's your read on this?
So I have mixed feelings because I think a lot of people feel the same way, is that, you know, Tesla had told us that it was this price and it was going to be, you know, hit 500 miles of range, which, okay, I get it with the inflation and the cost of things are starting to, you know, really impact. And of course, Tesla has introduced a lot of new technology here, right? Not only with the materials that they're using, but steer-by-wire. They're also putting in rear wheel steering, 10 degrees in the back wheels, air suspension. So these things, and I think that you expect them to have the minimum of a certain technology that is competitive on the marketplace. But why I think people are disappointed is because they thought it would be like blow it out of the water type of really good, you know, like whether that's okay, it tows 11,000 pounds. That's great. And that demonstration that they had of the 40,000 tractor pull thing was very impressive. And of course, it's impressive that it goes 2.6 seconds, 0 to 60. But honestly, I think range is key and king. And I think that it's great that they're offering this range extender. So someone in the comments was just asking about this. So basically what it is it's a battery bank that sits in the back of the truck, right in the center, so right up along the back side of where your, you know, back seats would be in the bed, and that would take up about a third of that space, and it's going to be somewhere like, you know, 40 45 to 50 kilowatt hours of a battery pack. Yeah, there you go. So there's the image of it. So it's sizable, and it says that it's a service like installed option, and I think strategically it makes sense that they did this because of course, the price for the dual motor, which I think is the one most people are going to opt for because of the range and the combination of what you get for it with the price. The price is $79,999. So technically, it would qualify for the federal tax incentive of $7,500. And then if you wanted to get the added-on range extender, it doesn't put you out of the money for getting that $7,500 tax credit. It's a $16,000 upgrade. So it is a little bit pricey, but to get 470 miles of range in this case in the all-wheel drive, the dual motor setup, I think, you know, that somewhat solves the problem of the 500 mile range, but then you don't obviously have that much usability or as much usability of the truck bed. To me, I felt like me owning a Rivian R1T, like, and I think probably a lot of people felt this way, was like a sigh of relief. Like, well, at least for the automakers, like, okay, I don't feel as, you know, like this thing is blowing it out of the water type of ordeal. Mm-hmm. I still think, you know, some people will probably pull out of their reservations because they were set in their mind of getting, you know, that wonderful price point in getting 500 miles of range, and they thought maybe the tri-motor would also be incorporated with the 500 miles of range. So I do think some people will drop off, but I still don't think that they're going to have an issue because it's still competitive. It's still right there in line with Lightning and R1T, and better obviously in a lot of cases with the 0 to 60 time and stuff that I mentioned. But I think that I was expecting it to be even better than it is. And of course, driving it is going to be a different experience. And from what I've seen from all the videos from MKBHD and from Jason Kamisa and stuff like that, the steer-by-wire is a big deal and it is something to get used to, but it is pretty neat to hear that this has finally been achieved. Check it out. And the 48-volt architecture. So a lot going on.
Hazel is our battery expert. What's your read on that battery pack in the truck? The truck bed. I agree with the idea.
Really big problem with this. I'm sorry, that is not a crash structure. Like batteries need to have their own crash structures. Like it's one of the, or they need to be built into the crash structure of the car, or the vehicle. It is incredibly important to protect them. To make sure that in the case of an impact, and yes, it's in the truck bed, so like, yes, you know, you're relatively unlikely to get the direct source of an impact. I don't know if it wouldn't move, though. I don't know how well this is actually integrated into any kind of, like, you know, if you roll it, what happens? I really think that is beyond an ugly solution to something that
on rolling,
shouldn't really be a problem.
On rolling, Musk did say, oh, well, the center of gravity is so low, even though the ride height can be lifted to 17 inches, which is insane. Mm-hmm. The center of gravity is so low, it won't flip in a crash. The power of human stupidity will prove that wrong.
Also, if you drive off a cliff, like it's going to, like there's certain scenarios where anything is going to roll. So, like, and I mean, I just don't believe that his grasp of physics is that good, to be honest. But you cannot just stick batteries on the. It's not very well protected in terms of like thermal management, sealing from the elements, which, as we know, is something that Tesla are not very good at, and stuff like that. Like, I just.
And actually, talking about build quality, Patrick, you've actually seen one of these over the weekend, wasn't it? And we saw Daniel Golson's pictures and we got his take on it when the lead designer apparently thought that it was a good idea to take a bag of spanners out to show rich people what they've been doing. But you've seen one in a showroom. What's your take? What did you reckon?
Yeah, so after that story that Daniel Golson ran, which kind of went viral for Inside EVs, which I'm very proud of. You know, it showed off, you know, Franz von Holzhausen's car, the matte black wrapped truck that he brought to a Cars and Coffee in SoCal. It didn't look great. And so, okay, flash forward a few weeks, and all of a sudden, production grade supposedly Cybertrucks are showing up in like Tesla galleries all over America. And I was like, I should go check one out this week. And my boss, Travis Okolsky, is like, you should go check one out today. And so I went and checked one out that day, because I'm a good soldier for this company and this website. But like, they have one at the Tesla Gallery in Manhattan, which is in the Meatpacking District, right off the West Side Highway in Lower Manhattan, if you know the area. I did not see any of the major build quality issues that Golson saw at first. I mean, the truck I saw there, it looked really well put together overall. I mean, it still has. I think by nature of the stainless steel body, it still has some panel gaps places. I don't know how they'd get around that with that design, but it looked very good on the whole. Like I said in the story I wrote, like, I still don't love the design. Like, just that's just me, my personal opinion here. But I mean, it is. I was stunned by when I saw it. I was just like, you're seeing this thing and just beholding it in person. And it's just, I don't know. It took me like a day to realize this. But like the last time I was this, I think, blown away by a car that went from concept to production like this was the BMW i8. And I'm just like, I just was walking around this thing. I'm like, how the hell did you do this? Like, it's unbelievable. This thing exists. When you look at it from the front and you see that triangle grill and that giant windscreen, that giant wiper, I'm like, how did this happen? This is crazy. And I mean, it looks like nothing else on the road. It really, it is going to turn every head that sees it, I think. And I'm really hoping that the cars they're producing right now are at that level of quality, and that these ones that went to showrooms are not ringers, because they very well could have been. I don't know this, but I think Tesla probably fast tracked them into showrooms to dismiss concerns about quality. But they don't talk to people, so who the hell knows, you know?
Lacey, did you see one too?
Yeah, I went to Tampa, so I was driving my way back up from Florida to Nashville, where I'm working, and I stopped at Tampa on the way, and I was really impressed with the quality. There were some minor areas where I saw, like, the front, the hood alignment, where it was closer up towards the windscreen. It was, you know, not exactly precise when it comes to the panel width, the gap, but it was like so minor that I don't think anybody would deny the truck because of it. And then the tailgate area was a little bit off. Maybe they could do some tightening or some kind of quick alignment for it. I'm not sure why it was positioned the way it was, but it was like quite a noticeable gap on it. Otherwise, I was very surprised. I did see some pictures of some other people posting though in different locations like Southern California, and I saw a lot of waving in the panels up, like where the truck bed, like how the tonneau cover comes down on that angle. There was some waving there, but honestly, like I think a lot of people have forgiven Tesla for the quality issues, and I don't think this is going to be an exception because, yeah, you can shoot it with a Tommy gun and it's going to be just fine.
For £100,000, people forgive wonky panels. Sorry, $100,000.
Yes, I know, it's weird.
Wonky panel, like, if only I'm dropping Tesla. Six figures on something.
Also, why wouldn't you send your very best trucks to Southern California, which is like your biggest market? Like New York sucks to drive in. It sucks to drive a truck in. Like, it's gonna look neat here, but like you send the best one to where people are buying all the cars. Also, and one of my writers at Inside EVs, Rob Stumpf, who's quite a bit smarter than I am, pointed this out. I don't think any of these cars in the showrooms have VIN numbers on them. So they say production grade, but at least the one I saw did not. And I don't think those might actually be for sale, or at least not yet. But those were nowhere to be found in these trucks, interestingly enough.
Yeah, because I can imagine someone walking into one of those dealers and going,
Like, are they actually drivable and such? I don't know. That's a great question, right? Because like I asked the people at the store in Manhattan, I was like, they were like, nobody's allowed to drive it. They wheeled it in, they flatbedded it in, no one's allowed to touch it or be in it. So I was like, okay, like those guys who were working there didn't know anything.
Mine had evidence of dirt and stuff that it definitely was driven. So it was like they wiped it down and but the whole underbody was it was dirty. So for sure the one that was in Tampa was driven.
Maybe there's a mix. Because if I don't know, I'd be surprised if there's full battery packs in showroom in every showroom model.
Yeah, Patrick and Lacey. So we've spoken a lot about the exterior. I'm curious about the interior. So we've got this massive 18.5-inch central screen, and there's screens in the rear. Like, how does that all work? How does it? I mean. You know, it looks as I believe he said it looks like the kind of car Blade Runner would drive. And I personally would like the car that Die Hard drives myself. It is the season.
Those characters, those aren't their names. We all know that, right? Like they weren't called Die Hard and Blade Runner in the movie. Like that's
yes,
that's
but Elon like, Musk does not. So
like Batman gets a name because the movie's named after him. But that's about it. You know,
he is a man John Wick. Dressed as a bat.
Yeah. Anyway.
Iron Man and the Spider-Mans. But what was the interior like? How did that sit with you? Did it look, because it looks quite, because Hazel and I will almost certainly only ever see these in pictures, because it's not legal here, is it? So yeah, what's it like?
Well, I saw someone at the factory, they were doing tours, and based on how the steer-by-wire system was constructed, it looks like they can have right-hand drive and be able to construct it in a way that is, you know, manufacturably like feasible for them to do it without like major costs changes. Yeah. So that was kind of cool to see. As far as the interior goes, a couple things that stood out. Of course, they're going to do the same mechanism as far as like shifting out on the screen and having it be predictive that we already saw in the S and the X, and having that fail safe of up on the top by where normally you would have a rear view mirror, the manual buttons that you can press in case anything happens where you need to use those buttons versus the screen. But apparently, I know in that picture there was a image of a rear view mirror, but from the videos that I saw, a lot of people are saying that there's no rear view mirror and that there's a camera view out the back that's like fixed on the screen at all times so that you can always see behind you. It's just a little sliver right underneath where your speedometer would be. And otherwise, I think the interior looks pretty good. It's obviously very simple and not a lot going on other than the fact that you have like insane visibility because the windows are massive and all the technology I would expect out of that screen when you're talking about like what Tesla does as far as a user standpoint. I think it looked pretty good.
One thing I'll add about the steer-by-wire, I do like it's one of the like low-key most interesting things about this car, but like you're going to see a lot more of that in the coming years. And like I talked to Toyota a few weeks ago, like they're putting that on a bunch of their next-gen EVs they're coming out with like the later part of this decade. And they're like, we have like a billion reasons for doing this. Like one is that when you get rid of the mechanical components, you know, in a steering system, you free up a lot of interior space, a lot of cabin space, a lot of design space to do other things. You know, you guys bring up a good point in that like a steering wheel could be put anywhere in the car, right or left. So that's great for a, you know, regionalization standpoint, but also Toyota considers that the bridge to autonomy. It's like, if the car could ultimately drive itself, which they all want to do one day, it's like, you don't need mechanical components for your steering system. Like this will be the bridge to that one day. It's like, okay, we'll have a steering wheel for now, but it's electronically operated and you can go back and forth. And then one day we're probably not going to have steering wheels at all. So like, I have to assume Tesla's thinking in the same direction. And it's being couched as like, oh, it's great for parts and maneuverability, but it's like, no, there's going to be more to this technology down the line than we've ever seen before.
I actually really like the introduction of steer-by-wire. I think it's a good thing for EVs in general. It can reduce a lot of the weight of the vehicle, or like it can partly reduce weight in the vehicle. That's really important. It can, to some extent, I mean, basically, if you have some big mechanical steering rod that's directly connected to the wheel, then that can get bent very easily. And it can also present challenges for driving. You know, I had a Renault Twingo, which is probably one of the heaviest steering cars I've ever driven because it had absolutely no power steering or assistance. And so it was literally you hauling that thing, which, you know, you don't need to go to the gym afterwards. And so generally, I think that cars that are easy for people to drive, and I know that there's a bit of like car community kind of like chest puffing about this, but like, actually, it is much safer for road users, especially in really big trucks, they are easy for people to drive, if they're easy for people to maneuver, if people can make adjustments like very easily. And so long as steer-by-wire is very responsive, so long as the system is perfectly functional, which there is no reason that it shouldn't be. You know, these are all you know, copper connectivity stuff that we have solved, basically. All of that capability is there. And frankly, to be honest, like, I know there's a little bit of like, ooh, it's gone a bit too far about steer-by-wire, and it can seem a little bit freaky, but like, actually, if you drive most vehicles, especially EVs these days, the power steering is such a hefty element that there's no real mechanical feedback anyway. I'm sure that they can do some simulated feedback if you want that. Lord knows a lot of us will have played racing games, and like, basically you can get quite a lot of feedback from that as well. Like, so
there's a set of plastic pedals under my desk right now. Like, I that makes it, but I might be very wrong. I don't think I am. Patrick, you might know this. Didn't the Infiniti Q50 come with steer by wire?
I guess your telepathy powers are really off point today. But like, I was just thinking about that, because that was like, they did that on the Q50 sports sedan. But it was a weird system, because like, I remember when I drove that car at launch, it's almost 10 years ago now. Like, I remember we didn't kind of love it at the time, like how it felt, especially in like an ICE sports sedan. What didn't feel like a great fit, you know, especially that car, which like, you know, it was really one of the best, like, you know, Japanese like BMW fighters ever made. It was like, okay, now the steering feels weird. Like, I don't know if people want that. But even weirder was the fact that Nissan never did anything else with that. It was on one car only, and it never proliferated across the lineup. And like, I brought that up with them. They're like, what happened? It's like, well, you know, like, it's that's a weird company on a lot of fronts these days. But like, they like another car that they had, something kind of ahead of the curve and groundbreaking that they just never did anything with. And now it's about to be, you know, you're going to be see a lot of other places too.
I mean, that was the first thing I saw was a steer-by-wire, and people were talking about it. It's like, we've had that for a while, but it did go absolutely nowhere. I want to talk a little bit about the performance, because I
real quickly, like, Can I just jump in about the interior that I just want to wrap up? The things that I saw were that the glove box is like a drawer mechanism, which was kind of cool. And then under the seat in the rear, there's a lot of storage there, which I thought was good. And at least you should have in a vehicle like this, because like my R1T has it. But as far as the space wise, it did look like it was rather spacious. I know that in the previous, like when we were first introduced to it, sorry, my leg keeps going off, in 2019, that, you know, the idea was that it would potentially even have a 6-passenger configuration, because you would have a bench seat in the middle where the driver and passenger up front were. But now that is for sure a console. They're not going in that direction. But otherwise, I think space wise, it looks pretty spot on as to what people expected, and those hidden storage areas are going to be valuable.
I have a question for the people who've actually seen it. Like, I don't know if Danny can pull back up the image of the seat, but, and I realize that this is a really weird thing to be worrying about, but as someone who's quite tall, are those headrests adjustable?
Didn't look like it.
Or are they just sport bucket seat style things?
Yeah.
They look similar to the Model S ones that we have in our Model S, where they're just all like built into.
But Lacey, you're a tall person. How do they work for you?
I would say I think they're comfortable enough. I think Tesla's new seats, like in my Model Y before I sold it, I still think like those are the best seats. Like they're so comfortable, and it has that same like built-in headrest like that. I still stand by that they're the most comfortable seats in the business. So obviously I haven't sat in the Cybertruck yet, but I would imagine that they're, you know, they build them themselves, so they're probably going to be pretty good.
Cool.
I wonder about rear headroom with
the Matt Watson from CarWow sat in it, and there was a guy with him back there that was 6'5", and he was in there, and he was comfortable.
Wow.
Okay. Well, that's
cool. I mean, he was getting very close to the top there, but he was comfortable.
It's fascinating. Yeah, the proportions of it are so crazy. It's like, it's hard to describe. Like, Lacey, I don't know if you felt this way when you saw it in person, but it's like, it looks bigger than an F-150, even though it's slightly smaller, but like, you're not sure where all the mass went, because the bed's not that big, but apparently the cabin's big, but also the hood. It's so triangly.
It's a masterwork of how good car design actually works, and how it really cannot work. It's like, what shape is this? What dimension? What is this going to do for
it? The front rhombus of the car.
Yeah. And I mean, I will say, like, I thought that it would feel bigger in person. I mean, it's big, but I thought it would feel bigger than what it was. But it's just so odd to see that shape, like, with your eyes. Like, it's like, I can't imagine how it's going to feel driving it.
I'm curious. Well, talking about driving it, it's fast. Well, the Cyber Beast is fast. 2.6 seconds to 60 is ludicrous and really unpleasant if done repeatedly. They say that the Cyber Beast will do 130 miles an hour. But to demonstrate the power and the torque, they drag raced a 911 with the Cyber Beast towing a 911. Now, I'm a bit of a nerd. So I kind of had a look at the cars, and because I know my 911s a little bit, it doesn't look like they definitely weren't using a turbo or a GT car. So we just knocked those on the head.
Not the top shelf stuff. Yeah.
It didn't even look like they were using a GTS, which is sort of the one you get before turbos and RSs, which is sort of like the greatest hits collection. The sort of sporty one, but the sort of dailyable one, which means they either used a Carrera or a Carrera 2. So I did a little bit of maths. So the car they dragged it against either would do 0 to 60 in 4.2 or 3.7 seconds. So markedly slower than the car. But, you know, being kind, if they used a manual Carrera 2, that's £3,263. If you use an auto Carrera, the less powerful 385 horsepower one, that's £3,317. So they're going, you know, a car less than half the weight with in almost, hang on, with one could have less than half the power, one about half the power, give or take. Why were they afraid to use a GT3 RS? Because that would have, that's 3,210 pounds. It's got a bit more power, but it's still not as quick to 62 as a Cyber Beast. A Cyber Beast is 2.6 seconds. GT3 RS is 3.2, but Porsche does always overestimate its 0-62 times quite dramatically. I think it was a 991 Turbo S would actually do 0-62 in 2.8. So I want to know exactly what Porsche that was and why they decided to double the weight, or like add another 50% of the weight onto the Cybertruck to then just beat a Porsche.
I know it's goofy, but like I love this. I thought it was funny as hell. I was like, okay, like there's a lot of criticisms you could heap at Elon or the Cybertruck or whatever, but I was like, oh, this is kind of delightful. And I know, like, yeah, to your point, it's like it may not have been like the best 911 or the fastest 911, but like none of them are slow. They're not slouches in any department. So like that it did this was neat. I think it's what the funnier thing that I was wondering was like, they were like, we went out and bought these cars at the dealership. It's like, okay, yeah. Who at Tesla got to keep the 911s? Is that like a Christmas bonus thing? It's like, don't tell anybody you get to keep the gas car, but like, you know, good job this year. Like, did they sell them? I mean, where'd those end up?
Which
supply of cars, like it is, which dealership was sitting on a couple of 911s?
Two bright green 911s.
Look, they're in Austin. Austin is fancy these days. Like, it's like, I say this as someone who lived there for a long time. It's like Texas LA. So it does not shock me that they just stroll into like the Porsche dealer in Austin. Like, yeah, I'll take two, please. You know.
Yeah, but normally they're like resale gray or black or white. Green, that kind of acid green. Oh, Carlos Zanigo, it was a stunt, Alex. Don't try to show that it wasn't logical. I know it's a stunt, but they spent a lot of money proving that it's just faster than a 911 if you tow a 911. If there wasn't a 911 on there, would they have beaten it?
Yeah, but what if you're in that situation? What if you find yourself towing a 911 in your Cybertruck and you were drag racing another 911? Now you know that you can pull that off, you know, and that's great for consumers everywhere, I think.
If you have a brand new Porsche 911 and you're not driving it to where you need to go, something is wrong, because 911s are great. Anyway, no, that just bugged me. So I spent more time than I should have done taking notes and doing stuff because the weights were, it just seemed odd to me. It was very cool. It was very funny. It's like a few years ago, I think Porsche towed a 747 out of a hangar with a Cayenne turbo, but that's because the Cayenne had loads and loads of torque, which leads me to the torque figures. So the all-wheel drive car is, they say, 7,435 pound-feet. The Cyber Beast is 10,296 pound-feet. How are they measuring that? How does that work? Is it at the wheel? Is it in the motor? Are they just combining motor powers? Like, because that amount of torque at the wheels would destroy tarmac. Like, I'm really, it again, it's another thing. It's like, it's a cool number to throw around. It's a cool thing to sling around and go, yeah, well, it's got 10,300 pound feet. Isn't that cool? This is my personality here. It's got all the torque. But how did they get to that number? I'm confused and concerned and afraid.
Great question.
Any ideas? No, good. Just me. Good. So something for us to think about. So what else we got in this thing? So we talk about towing figures and payload figures. Those aren't as big as expected, are they?
So no, I think it was 14,000 was the original projection, yeah. But now it's 11,000. Payload's good, yeah. Though. 2,500 pounds. That beats everyone.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's the best out there.
Okay. So why has that happened? What do you think?
I don't know. There's a lot of things that didn't happen that I'm kind of surprised by, but also at the same time, like, you kind of got to give in some regard, in my opinion. So where is that going to be? You know, a lot of things that I was interested about was the battery, because I haven't heard, like, I've heard mixed things about the battery size. Like, I saw on the MKBHD video that it's 123 kilowatt hour battery pack. But then Tesla published the efficiency rating of the dual motor setup, and the equivalent of what they were saying that the consumption was versus what the estimated range was would mean that it would be like 100 and I think it was like 45 kilowatt hour battery pack or so. So that is what kind of sparked my mind, like question about what's the size of the pack and what's the deal with that?
Because I mean, my brain can't pluck a figure. So if it weighs as much as it does, which is about three and a bit tons in non-freedom units, 300 odd mile range. Yeah, 340 mile range. So for the all-wheel drive car, how big would that need to be? Like 150 kilowatts?
I'm thinking something like that. But then also, like, if you think about what's coming out of that plant with the 4680 cells, is Tesla Model Y battery packs, and people are projecting those to be maybe somewhere around like 70 to 75 kilowatt hours. Maybe they're two packs constructed together to save on, you know, the manufacturing and simplicity of it. Because I did see that Drew Baglino said that it is a split pack. So although it's 800 plus volt architecture, it's actually two 400 volt packs so that it can charge on the supercharging network without an issue because it's 250 kilowatt DC fast charging.
Yeah. Hazel, you're doing some nodding. What do you think?
So I think Lacey's totally on the money there. My theory would be that it is basically two Model Y packs, partly because Tesla are not known for sort of redesigning batteries a lot. They made or they kind of make one and then put it in everything. Because of the supercharger network. Like, this needs to be compatible with existing Tesla products. It needs to be compatible with the Tesla chargers that people already have installed in their homes, because this is a car for Tesla people or a vehicle for Tesla people. You know, when we just started talking about this, the commenters on the YouTube were saying, like, this isn't a truck for people who want to buy a truck. This is a truck for people who want to buy a Tesla. That compatibility is very important. Although I also think it is kind of just sort of laziness some extent.
Well, they love cost savings. That's, I think, their main priority is make it for cheaper so that they can make higher profit margin. But I think one thing that you touched on that's important. Yes. One thing that you touched on, this has power sharing, so it will work with Tesla's existing switch system with the Powerwall. So it will have that capability of being bi-directional. I didn't see any, I think it was like 11.5 kilowatts was the maximum output for it. There were a couple notes in there, though, that I saw in the disclaimers that was like, oh, if you wanted to get this like mobile connector and additional adapters, you can get an additional 32 amps somehow. But I couldn't find anything about that on what those devices looked like, which that kind of piqued my interest. But that was another thing that I was like, okay, good. At least it can compete with the F-150 Lightning in that regard when we're talking about V2X kind of stuff.
Mm. Yeah, sorry, I was lost in vehicle to X. It can do all the things. There are some bits of it that are like so incredibly like mind-blowing. It does all the things, like some of the bits on it isn't new, and there's a little bit of a kind of oh, look, our car's got this thing, isn't this an incredible innovation. You look at it and go, yeah, that's been on Volvos for years, like, this is silly. I'd quite like to just give a moment or two to the fact that they shot it a lot with guns. Two questions, really, to my American colleagues. Is this something that happens regularly? And especially, do people have Thompson guns in town? And do they then use them on their enemies? Or is that just a 1930s thing?
That was primarily a 1930s thing.
I think, right, that okay.
Even in your more... Yeah, sorry.
It's for the movies.
Yeah. Even in your more gun-friendly states, they've moved on to much more modern firearms that would tear through this thing. That's extraordinarily silly. And I've read some takes that's like maybe it reflects kind of a pessimistic view of society, a dystopian, apocalyptic view of where we're going. I mean, I don't think, you know, I'm not sure Musk is I don't know if I'd call him an optimist so much anymore these days. I mean, maybe it, for what he believes in, but I mean, you know, I don't know how reflective of that, of his worldview, the bulletproofness of it is. It seems a little excessive. I think using this century old gun or whatever to demonstrate it is extraordinarily silly and like
man-child.
Yeah, totally. Like, there are certainly bulletproof vehicles like you know that VIPs use, you know, like armored Suburbans, those armored BMWs. They even have those in Europe, but it's like that's not what this is. Doing that would have added considerable weight to this truck. Like I think it's all very very silly, and I don't know. I they really kind of bent over backwards to do this, like the Tommy gun, the Joe Rogan's shooting it with a bow and arrow. So I guess, you know, like Link from Zelda's out there. He's like, well, shit, now what do I do? Like,
I'll just have to find a load bed of an F-150 with some clay pots I can hit with my sword.
Like, right. Yeah.
It's, I did find it. What happened in the video is very cool. Like you see that they shot it with a Glock, they shot it with a shotgun, they shot it with an MP5, and of course the Mask's weapon of choice, a Tommy gun. And you see what happens to the panel. Like there's lots of flex in it, but it doesn't. Nothing goes through, which is very cool for a consumer product. To link back weirdly to Electrogenic, a UK firm that. Converts vehicles like ICE vehicles to EV. They have a Land Rover Defender, and the kit you and I could buy today is the same one they're testing with the British military at the moment. So you can say, well, my car's military grade because the military use it. Isn't that brilliant? So I guess there's a little bit of posturing involved in that. But I'm forever sort of anytime there's mention of the bulletproofness and the isn't this impressive. There was a tweet. I keep an eye on Tesla Twitter. It scares me a little bit. I keep an eye on it. There was a guy saying, oh, all you people mocking us about it being bulletproof. I'll know that I'm perfectly safe when I'm out and about. It's like, where do you live? Like, how many enemies do you have? You're Keith from accounts.
Also, like
no one cares.
Like the people who need to worry about getting shot are far more likely to be people who write about Tesla in some way that isn't extremely glowing.
Yes. Yeah. I said something nasty about Tesla. Oh, good. An angry Tesla person is going to come up in his Cybertruck. Lean out of his window.
Luckily, I'll be driving a Cybertruck then too to protect myself from the Cybertruck drivers. You know?
Yes. That said, I have read some assumptions that the stainless steel is supposed to be something that they produced in order for them to also be able to utilize for SpaceX. So I guess it would make sense if we are talking again about how they love cost savings and they love being able to make materials that would make sense for using it in different applications, then okay, I get it. I read that it was 1.8 millimeters thick, and damn, is that thick. That would make sense if it is for SpaceX applications.
Mm. Again, there's that element of, isn't it cool you've got a spaceship on your car? But also, why? Why not? Because it adds massive cost and complexity to it, and that's maybe silly. But hey, I'm not a billionaire businessman entrepreneur Justin Hammer wannabe.
You lied to me.
I know. I am a man child though, Lacey. I will be a man child until the day I die. Can confirm. I'm sat in front of many, many Lego cars. So one final one to sort of slowly wrap us up is, do you think this thing will actually be a success? Like, what do you think after the initial tranche of Tesla people get over the, oh, shiny new toy, I want one, here's $100,000 that I've miraculously pulled from my crypto, whatever. Do you think that this, much like Model S, Model X, Model 3, those have penetrated the mainstream. Like, without those, EVs probably wouldn't be a prominent, or probably would be as prominent now as they are. They still would have gotten there, but it would have taken a bit longer, potentially. So do you think it'll make that crossover into the mainstream, or is this really just the samurai sword above the mantelpiece? Is this the look at how shiny I am, look, I've got the cool toy? Is it an iPhone?
I think so.
It'll succeed.
Go ahead.
Oh, you first. Oh, I want to hear your take.
You go first, please. Yeah, you own the car that's, I think, the closest analog of this thing today, and you've been very positive about it so far. So, like, what do you think here?
Well, I am disappointed in it because they didn't give us what they said they were going to give us, but I think it's because they haven't reached the energy density that they were expecting with the 4680 cells, among other things. But I do think that if they're coming out with them in the market with something that is already competitive with the things that are on the marketplace right now, yes, maybe some buyers are going to go to the Lightning or the Rivian and be like, okay, I guess I'm just going to get this now because it's not as good as I thought it was going to be. But I don't think that Tesla is out of the running as far as being leading in this segment, because knowing how Tesla operates, I think they're still going to sell all of them that they're going to make for years to come. And I also think that they are going to do the things that they usually do, which is incentivize people in different ways, whether that's giving them FSD for free or unlimited supercharging miles or dropping the price. I think that they're going to get the ramping up of the manufacturing process up enough to be able to pull some different levers for things, and then really start to progress the innovation as far as the battery technology goes in ways that they can improve the product that we'll see manifested in the future. But I just don't see them not continuing to innovate and not continuing to make the product better and pull the levers that they need to incentivize people to buy the product. And I think a lot of people will 179 this. I know that they get that price point of the all-wheel drive version at $79,999, whatever, to get the tax credit. But I think a lot of people are just going to 179 it, which is a, if you don't know, basically your business can just write the vehicle off because it's over 6,000 pounds. And that's what people with G-Wagons do all the time here in the States. So I think that I don't see them having a problem with selling them.
And in the blue corner, Patrick George.
No, I agree with a lot of that. I think that they are absolutely going to sell everyone they can manage to build. I think the bigger question is, like, how much of a bath are they gonna take trying to do that? Because Musk has warned them it's going to be years before it's stable and profitable. And like as popular as it's going to be with the ones that get made and get sold at high prices, I don't feel like it's the car they should have made right now. I think that I wish that the company had done the $25,000 EV that they have been flirting with for years, but been reading the Isaacson book about Musk, and he didn't want to do it. He didn't want to do that right away. He thought it was too boring. He thought Model Y was too boring. It was their most successful car ever. It's not the car we need right now in the world. It's not the car Tesla needs right now, but I hope they can get to the point where it's not just some major loss leader for them.
You're telling me the man who hates advertising doesn't want to build a car that will make lots of money.
He contains multitudes. Hazel, what do we think?
I think this feels like it's going to be a sort of quirky episode in automotive history in kind of like 20 years time. I mean, also this car is completely abstract to me and Alex. Because we will never have one. You cannot legally drive these things here.
Because they're too heavy, aren't they? They're too big.
Yeah, you need a truck license. So, yeah. As in like a heavy goods
license. As in HGV, a big rig license to do that.
It's a completely abstract concept to me. I'm very unlikely to ever see one, let alone drive it. But it feels like something. There will probably be books written about it. There will probably be quirky things written about it. Probably we will all be writing about it in 20 years' time going like, wasn't it weird that we made the Cybertruck? I think the most interesting thing about it, and I was thinking this all the time we was discussing it, is we've been talking about this the whole time that we've been on the podcast. Previously, the previous hosts were talking about it for years. This is a car that people could put reservations down on before it was designed, which is a really, really weird idea.
Bigger question, what the hell are we going to talk about now?
Well, I mean, I assume reaction. But yeah, there's a lot of strange things about the Cybertruck, and probably one of the oddest is that it now does actually exist, and it is something that we can debate the success of. I suspect that a lot of them will become kind of garage curios quite rapidly, and that they won't actually get a huge amount of mileage.
It's a Tesla supercar, basically. They're a high-end supercar.
I'm with Hazel on it. I find it an utterly bizarre thing. It's this thing that's hanging over the automotive industry. But I'll see one if I go to the States at some point. But it's this imaginary figure that just sits and going, well, you can't have this. So it's which is why I find it quite easy to be on the sort of more Mickey taking side of things, because it's if you look at it from a completely outside perspective, it is a ludicrous vehicle, but so are most big pickup trucks, because I'm not a builder, I don't need one. So the idea of that as a recreational vehicle,
you're not an entrepreneur and you're not a builder, why are you even lying on your CV?
Oh yeah, you that has not even gotten to the biggest lie yet. I say I'm 5'9". Anyway, that brings us to our hour. Not before we shift to Tesla news. No, that would be cool. thank you all.
Danny really committed to that.
He really did commit to the bit. Bravo. First and foremost, thank you so much to our producer Danny Howard, who keeps us all in line and on the live stream, makes all the pictures and magicalness happen. If you want to get in touch with us, feel free to send an email to contact@insideevs.com or stalk us on our various social medias. But if you do that, be nice. So it's goodbye from me. Goodbye from Lacey. She's doing a wave. Goodbye from Hazel Southwell.
Bye.
And finally, goodbye from the boss man, Patrick George.
We'll see you out there on the road in all of our Cybertrucks. We're
all
about
to get on. All of our Cybertrucks covered in low-caliber bullet. Of course you will.
Yeah, heck yeah.
Have you actually ordered one?
Yeah, Tim has 4 on order. So
we are going to talk about this next week. We will see you same time. Same place where we have more Cybertruck content, thanks to Lacey.
That's 12 motors all told, right?
Yeah, right.
Also, that means we can have one each and go racing.
Thanks, Lacey.
Oh, that would be a fun
very
one.
Kind Christmas
Good idea.
Present. Thanks. Anyway, we will see you all next week. Bye.
See ya.